Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Asset Allocation Report for August 26th, 2024. I'm Phil Adler. One of the challenges for fixed income investors is figuring out what part of the yield curve is most attractive and carries the least risk at any particular time. That challenge is not getting any easier. And some market observers who worry about overstimulation of the economy are pointing an accusatory finger at the U.S. Treasury. Confluence Investment Management Associate Market Strategist Thomas Wash joins us today to unravel the various points of view and explain the current Confluence opinion on fixed income. Thomas, a recent paper published by two respected economists suggests that there may be a tug of war between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury over monetary policy. Don't these two agencies share goals, or am I being naive?
Well, let me start off by saying thank you for having me. The ultimate goal of both the Treasury and the Federal Reserve is a smoothly functioning economy. While the Treasury focuses on efficient financing of the deficit, the Fed actually aims for, you know, things like price stability, maximum employment, and moderate long-term interest rates. Now, traditionally, these entities have been seen as collaborative partners. However, this new analysis by prominent economists Nouriel Roubini and Stephen Murren challenges that notion. They suggest that the Treasury may be prioritizing political objectives and undermining the Fed's monetary policy in the process.
Well, we'll take a closer look at their argument in a moment, but first, the Fed has been slow to lower interest rates because it apparently fears the economy may still be too hot and inflation may reignite. And at least by some measures, it seems that the present level of interest rates hasn't really slowed the economy all that much. Where does the Fed stand in its quest to prop up interest rates, slow the economy, and curb inflation by ratcheting back its bond repurchase program?
Let me start off by saying that is an excellent question, and it's something I've been thinking about for a while. Core inflation surged unexpectedly at the beginning of the year, but remained subdued compared to the previous 2 years. So let me explain that. If you look at the first half of the year, PCE inflation, which is the Fed's preferred inflation tool, rose 1.6%. While this exceeds the pre-pandemic average, which is less than 1%, it is still significantly lower than the 2% and the 2.5% rates of 2023 and 2022, respectively, within that same six-month period. Now, this moderation has prompted the Fed to ease its monetary tightening measures. In June, the central bank slowed the pace of quantitative tightening, and officials have already started to begin openly advocating for rate cuts in September.
Doesn't growth in the federal deficit, which is expanding rapidly, demand the issuance of more bonds, which need higher interest rates to attract buyers, which would naturally slow the economy?
You know, Phil, you're absolutely right in principle. When the government spends more than it collects in taxes, it must borrow money. Now, this is typically done by issuing government securities. As the supply of these bonds increases, it tends to push interest rates up. You know, you just got to think of it like any other market. More supply often leads to lower prices, which for bonds means higher interest rates. Now, government bond yields are a key benchmark. So when they rise, it impacts the borrowing costs for everyone, from homeowners to businesses. Higher borrowing costs can slow down the economy as people and businesses may spend less and invest less when it's more expensive to borrow.
Well, back to that report we mentioned earlier, the one that suggests that the U.S. Treasury is currently intentionally favoring shorter-term debt over longer-term notes. Exactly how might this be counterproductive to Fed strategy and artificially stimulate the U.S. economy?
So one thing to remember is that Treasury bills are essentially cash equivalents. You know, they're safe, and to be honest, they're easily converted to money. You know, financial institutions rely on them, using them as reserves, and even as collateral for loans. Now, this process can amplify the money supply through the money multiplier effect, which is a key concern for the central bank aiming to control the economy. Now, historically, the Federal Reserve, under figures like Paul Volcker, closely monitored the money supply to guide monetary policy. Now, if we assume this approach remains relevant today, The recent uptick in the annual increase in the money supply could be a cause for concern for policymakers worried about a resurgence of inflationary pressures.
The report further suggests the Treasury is undertaking this strategy to keep the economy humming along as we draw closer to Election Day. Do you think this might be true?
Well, that feels like a loaded question, but let me try my best to answer it. While we acknowledge the possibility of political motivations, we believe attributing the Treasury's actions solely to politics is a gross oversimplification. You know, listen, the Treasury's decisions are undoubtedly unusual when compared to previous years, but so too are the economic conditions we face with the unprecedented rise in inflation and interest rates. Therefore, I believe the Treasury deserves a little bit more credit as they try to figure out the cheapest way to fund the government's ever-growing budget deficit.
Thomas, do you see a danger emanating from this current Treasury strategy?
Yep, no doubt. There is a concern about rollover risk. By borrowing short-term in an inverted yield curve environment, the Treasury is essentially betting on interest rate cuts. Now, if the Fed delivers, the Treasury wins by refinancing debt at lower costs. But if the Fed surprises with rate hikes, the Treasury faces higher borrowing costs across the board. Now, this means that they may have potentially squandered the chance to lock in lower long-term rates before they climbed.
Thomas, you suggest that there may be other reasons for the Treasury strategy of favoring issuance of short-term debt. For one, what you call the market's response to higher rates. Explain.
Oh, gladly. Since 2022, the Fed's aggressive rate hikes have sparked a dramatic upheaval in the bond market. You know, investors have fled long-term bonds, seeking the safety and higher returns for Treasury bills. Now, this sharp reversal of the decade-long bond bull market is evident in Treasury auctions, which consistently show weak demand for long-term bonds and strong demand for Treasury bills. Now, we are confident that this change in investor preference influenced the Treasury's actions to adjust its borrowing strategy as opposed to any other factor.
Also, you mentioned that the Treasury may have used the sale of short-term bills as a tool to limit potential bank failures in the wake of the Silicon Valley Bank failure in 2023. How exactly?
Sure, I can explain that. You know, Treasury bills help alleviate liquidity stress within the interbank lending market. So let me explain a little bit more. So in 2023, rapidly rising interest rates triggered by the Fed's tightening policy caused significant losses on bank bond holdings. Now, this development led to the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and a broader banking panic. To stabilize the system, the Fed created emergency lending programs that allow banks to borrow at favorable rates. Now, although it prevented a broader bank panic, it came at the expense of the Fed's balance sheet reduction. So when the Treasury flooded the market with these highly liquid Treasury bills, it provided banks with another crucial safety net, therefore easing pressures on the banking system and reducing the need for direct intervention.
Well, as banks find firmer footing, can we assume the Fed will be more likely to extend its tightening policy?
You could argue that the Treasury's actions have already prolonged the duration of the Fed's tightening cycle beyond what many were already anticipating. You know, remember, at the start of the year, people were pretty confident that the Fed would start cutting in March. However, it's been able to keep rates unchanged over the last 13 months. Now, given certain labor market indicators, particularly the recent triggering of the SOM rule, it can be argued that the Fed may have kept rates too high for too long already.
Well, let's turn to fixed income strategy for investors. Long bonds, they're currently not favored within Confluent's asset allocation models. What impact would a more deliberate Fed easing cycle have on bond prices?
Let me explain it like this. You know, we maintain a very cautious stance on long-term bonds, and that's not without reason. You know, the potential of persistent inflation remains a concern due to geopolitical tensions and uncertainties around the labor supply driven by potentially tighter immigration policy. As a result, we consider long-term bonds more of a speculative trade than a sound investment at this time.
Well, what areas of the bond market are currently favored by Confluent analysts?
Well, we favor the middle of the yield curve, leaning toward shorter to intermediate term bonds. You know, this positioning benefits from the current uncertainty around the Fed's interest rate path as they aim for a soft landing. However, if our outlook is incorrect. It's likely due to a severe economic downturn, forcing the Fed to cut aggressively.
Which we hope will not happen.
Agreed.
Just a couple of more questions before we close. First, Thomas, if it is true that current Treasury Department policy favoring short-term bill issuance is artificially boosting the economy, can we expect an end to this strategy might cause some decrease in economic activity in the months ahead?
So, while it's plausible that the issuance has influenced growth, the extent of its impact is, somewhat uncertain. The latest senior loan officer opinion surveys indicates that there is still this ongoing hesitancy for banks to lend, even despite this improved in financial conditions. That said, the issuance may have encouraged increased risk-taking in the market, which is why I think equities have gotten off to a strong start to this year. Ultimately, I believe the conclusion of the policy will exert a more significant impact on financial market than the overall economy.
How do you see this all shaking out?
That's a great question. I anticipate the economy to continue its modest growth trajectory. However, I wouldn't be surprised to see the dominance of the Magnificent Seven wane as the market broadens out. We're already witnessing a shift in investor focus towards sectors beyond the mega tech companies, a trend I anticipate strengthening in the second half of the year.
Thank you, Thomas. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. Also, this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.